The content in this audio recording provides general information, however, it does not substitute legal advice or opinion. Information is best used in conjunction with legal advice from an experienced member of our team. Dispelling the myths, what you should know when separating. When separating or thinking about separation, you may hear stories from friends and family about what happened during their divorce. Perhaps you've seen separation or divorce play out or portrayed on TV. All of these things can shape what you think may happen when you separate. As a family lawyer, I've heard some common myths come up time and time again, and I want to dispel some of them for you so you are clear on what is fact and what is fiction. Listen on to hear six of the most common myths dispelled. Myth number one, a father is rarely given a shared care arrangement. It is often thought that the mother will always get primary care of the children when a separation occurs. This is definitely not always the case. In Australia, there is no law or legal presumption that a mother should get greater custody rights to a child than the father does. Unless there are issues of serious family violence or risk to a child, the law here in Australia is that there is a presumption of equal shared parental responsibility between the mother and father. This means that you have to make all of the major decisions together about your child, even when you separate. This can include jointly deciding things like religion, school, and major health decisions. When it comes to parenting arrangements, the main consideration is what is in the child's best interests. If equal shared parental responsibility is presumed, then the court must consider whether it is practical and in the best interests of the child for them to spend equal time or even substantial and significant time with each of their parents. Substantial and significant time includes the children spending weekdays, weekends, and holidays with each parent, and each parent having meaningful involvement with the children's daily routine. If you have very young children, for example, who haven't spent much time with their father due to their age, such as a baby who needs to be breastfed, then the social science behind the potential decision is that shorter, more frequent visits with the father is going to be the best way to try and establish that bond with him while the child is still very young. There is, however, no rule of thumb that the children go with the mother. There are a range of factors that are taken into account, such as what the arrangements were during the relationship, or whether the child is primarily attached to one parent, along with practical considerations as to how that time will work. When there is a situation where the father has had very little to do with the child but now wants to be more present, the fact that he didn't have any historical involvement doesn't disqualify him from being able to build up a relationship and spend time with his child moving forward. This may take some time, though. The law sees that it is in the best interest of a child to have a meaningful relationship with both parents. In the circumstances where the father wishes to be more present with the child than they previously have been, it may be appropriate for a child's time with them to gradually increase over time. Unless there is a reason why it shouldn't be the case, the court aims for the child to have substantial and significant time with both parents. Myth number two, I need to file for divorce. People first contact a law firm asking for help to get a divorce. Many don't realize the distinction between a divorce and a property settlement. A divorce, that is the legal end to a marriage, can only occur after you have been separated for 12 months or more. When you initially separate, you are able to sort out your property settlement and parenting arrangements straight away if you wish. A divorce order is a single document that says you are no longer legally married. As an example, sometimes people go through negotiations and/or court and have a property settlement finalized but may still be legally married as they are not yet eligible to apply for a divorce. At the earliest, divorce can be granted 12 months after the date of separation. Getting advice from a lawyer when you separate is essential, as sometimes it might not be advantageous to file for divorce as soon as the 12 months is up. For example, I had a client with a family trust who then filed for divorce. The way the trust was set up was that it only included the former partner as a beneficiary if they were a spouse. This is not an uncommon setup as a way to achieve income splitting for tax-effective purposes. Once the divorce had gone through, the husband didn't realise that because his ex-wife was no longer his spouse, he was no longer able to distribute income to her anymore, causing tax implications that he hadn't previously considered. Another example is a client I worked with who had not yet finalised a property settlement. Given a divorce triggers a time limitation for the property settlement to be finalised, she decided to hold off making an application until the financial settlement could be further progressed. It is for reasons such as these that it is recommended to seek advice about the timing of when you file for a divorce. 12 months after separation is the minimum. Myth number 3. If we separate, I'm entitled to 50%. At times, people assume when they separate they will be entitled to 50% of the asset pool. Whilst this might be the case for some relationships, it's not the case for everyone. The court considers a number of factors to determine the percentage split. These factors include the contributions that each of you brought to the relationship from when you first got together, the financial and non-financial contributions that you have each made over the relationship, and future factors, including income earning disparities, health issues, age differences, age of the children, and parenting arrangements into the future. These factors are taken into account when the court considers what the percentage of the property pool each party should receive. Each case is different, and the outcome is not always going to be 50-50. The court goes through a 5-step process to determine the division of assets. Firstly, a determination must be made as to whether or not it is just and equitable to make any adjustments to the party's property interests. Infrequently, circumstances may be such that it is not appropriate to make any adjustment, but this is rare. Step 2 is to identify the property to be divided and the value of that property. Step 3 is assessing both people's contributions, as mentioned earlier, through the marriage or de facto relationship. Step 4 considers future factors. This involves assessing whether there needs to be any adjustment for each party's needs in the future, based on the factors such as age, health, earning capacities, and the care of children. And step 5 requires a consideration of the practical effect of the proposed property settlement and whether it would be just and equitable. The fourth myth is, I can't separate because I won't be able to support myself. Sometimes people will come to us with the thought that they can't separate because they won't have funds to support themselves. For example, we often see a mother who stayed at home to care for the children and who isn't employed. She is concerned that she won't be able to survive financially when they separate, unaware that she is able to claim interim spousal maintenance while trying to sort out her property settlement, or to access funds if available to meet her immediate needs. The court looks at whether one party has a need for what is called maintenance because they can't meet their reasonable weekly needs from their own income. So even if you haven't worked or have only a little amount of income because you have been out of the workforce, you may be able to receive spousal maintenance. What will be considered is if the other party has the capacity to pay spousal maintenance. So after they have met their reasonable weekly needs, do they have any surplus left over? Generally, in a marriage where one party hasn't worked, there will be some sort of surplus that can be provided to the other party in the interim. If this sounds like you, to negotiate this type of arrangement, work with your lawyer and write to the other party to request they pay an amount for spousal maintenance. If you don't reach an agreement, then you can apply to court to seek that the other party pay you maintenance. Myth number 5. We've separated so my former partner can't access my inheritance. When going through a property settlement, the assets you have at the time the property settlement is being worked through are what will be considered. This process can take some time though, so if an inheritance is received after separation but before the property settlement is finalised, it can potentially form part of the property pool available for division. The fact that an inheritance came in after separation doesn't mean it is not considered as part of the asset pool. When it was received and by whom is relevant to considerations about who contributed what to the asset pool. It may alter the assessment of contributions as discussed earlier. However, if the property settlement has been finalised, then your former spouse will have no claim to your inheritance under family law. This is one of the reasons why it is important you complete all the necessary paperwork and have orders and agreements signed. And the final commonly held misconception is, keep the lawyers out of it and we'll have a handshake agreement. Many people feel that getting lawyers involved in their separation may be expensive and unnecessary, particularly where things are amicable between both parties. However, if you don't document things correctly, then you can end up costing yourself more in the long run. An example of this is having to pay stamp duty with the transfer of a property, which would otherwise be exempt under an order or agreement. If you only have a handshake agreement, or a document that is not recognised under the Family Law Act, this can leave you open to the risk of further claims in the future, potentially a larger claim, even if the assets have been sold. So it is important to formalise the property settlement and have it signed off by the court. I do hope that this information has clarified some of these common myths for you. What is true is that the only way you can be truly confident about your next steps is by talking with a specialist family lawyer and seeking advice specific to your circumstances. With advice from people who are dealing with a range of issues for their clients in the family law space, you will be in a far better position to make informed decisions and act on them with confidence.